97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Hey, good morning to you. It is the 29th day of January. It's a Wednesday morning. I'm Mark Cox in here on the Mark Cox Morning Show. And it's just me and Carl this morning. How are we doing? You doing all right?
Snow melted.
The snow melted. Well, a little bit anyway, right? I saw our friend Jane Duker tweet out a picture yesterday of a street that 10 hours ago was still completely ice covered.
Oh, and a water main broke on my block. So.
Oh, perfect.
Because, just, you know, the pipes are lead and they compact and they contract and then they expand. And also, I did something nice for my wife yesterday, Mark.
Well, that's nice.
I washed her car. And then, of course, since there's a water main, all the water that I had to drive through, she's like, what are all the streaks on the car that you did so nice for me? I'm like, that's because the street department is down the street ruining.
Well, that's the whole thing. You want to go get your car washed, and then because the stuff is
everywhere,
the snow's melting everywhere, right? It's just running off, and then the water splashes up from the car in front of you onto your car, and it's just almost a waste of time.
She appreciated the act of love that I did.
Well, that's nice, Carl, because that's important. That's important in a marriage. You got to get that in there every once in a while, right? That's for sure.
Does it make up for all the other things I've done?
No, of course not.
No.
Of course not. Come on, you can't expect a miracle. You're not a miracle worker, Carl.
No.
You just do what you can. Kim St. Ange off again today. We do understand she will be back tomorrow.
She's returning tomorrow.
And we're looking forward to that. Scott Jagow is going to be helping us out with news, but is also doing double duty this morning. So he's not actually going to be here in the studio with us. We'll be carrying on here. We got lots of stuff to get to, though, for you, honestly. A little later, Senator Eric Schmidt is going to join us live in the 7 o'clock hour. It's a big day in Washington, D.C. RFK Jr. has his nomination hearings today. I saw Eric tweet out a picture of he and RFK Jr. yesterday. He's all in. I don't know if he'll be the one sitting down in the hearing introducing him. They usually assign a Republican senator to do that. When I saw that picture, I wonder if that'll be Senator Schmidt. I don't know, but we will get to ask him that question. Can't wait to ask him about the absolute liberal left-wing meltdown after Donald Trump suggested a spending freeze yesterday. Could you imagine pausing spending just to make sure that you're doing it right, that you're not wasting any of that money, that none of that money is going to, like just silly things like drag shows in Central America? Wouldn't you love to know if any of your taxpayer dollars is going toward any of that absolute nonsensical garbage? Well, of course it is. And now they're in a complete panic that Trump's going to dig in, realize what all this wasteful crap was that's enriching the NGOs that the left has put together to, you know, push its their ridiculous beliefs worldwide. And that's going to be eliminated. It will be eliminated. It's what Donald Trump was tasked with when Americans put him into the White House. But the meltdown yesterday was unbelievable. We're going to get to some more of that. Caroline Leavitt, if you missed that news conference yesterday, I heard Reardon talking about it some yesterday afternoon. It was classic. It was a master class for PR people. It was a master class for spokespeople to watch. The mainstream media gets schooled by a 27-year-old woman.
She does sound 27, though.
Whatever. She's on it. She's masterful. She's like that Alina Haba, who's one of Trump's law attorneys, right? And I enjoyed just like, wow. She is just shutting them down. They've opened up new chairs in there. I mean, it was enjoyable to watch that yesterday without having somebody behind the podium completely in over her head, as we saw with KGP over the years. It has to have a binder with different colored tabs so that when somebody asks her a question, she can flip to that page and figure out what her talking points are. Caroline Leavitt didn't need that at all yesterday. And boy, what a relief. I mean, the media must hate her because of what she said to them yesterday, but they've also at the same time got to quietly appreciate the fact that they're not talking to a complete moron who's just repeating talking points. So I thought it was fantastic. And apparently Jim the Acoster and Donald Trump exchanged words yesterday via Twitter, which was, you know, Acosta lost his job. Trump celebrated it. Acosta fired back at him. I mean, you just go. It's like watching a sideshow in a circus. It's pretty funny stuff. So anyway, glad you're with us. I found that picture I was talking about, Carl, that Jane tweeted out 12 hours ago. So at 5 o'clock last night, this was a picture. If you're watching on the socials this morning, we got you up on Twitter and YouTube and Facebook and all that stuff. This is Laclede and Euclid 12 hours ago.
Central West End.
23 days into the storm, and today it got up to 50 degrees. Now, I'm going to show this to the camera. That's a solid sheet of ice. Just a solid sheet of ice 23 days after the storm. And if you look at that, and there are a couple of lanes clear, can't you ask yourself, how hard would it have been to run a snowplow and some salt on that particular stretch of road so that people could at least park on the side of the road without having to park on a sheet of ice?
You can almost park in front of the library. Yeah. Almost.
Well, as you can imagine, they're making hay out of this in the election that's going to be coming up. On Friday, we're going to get Jane Duker on the program, and we're going to talk a little bit more about this mayor's race. I think Tashar Jones may be in trouble here. Now, do I think that Kara Spencer is a better option? No. She's as radical, loony, left-wing as Tashar Jones is. But I do think that Tashar has stepped in it in a number of ways. Here's the deal, and this would be so funny if it was. You have to understand that the voting system, the ranked choice voting system that the Democrats put in the city of St. Louis was put in for one reason, to get Tashar Jones elected. And it could very well be her demise. Here's what Duker's talking about on Twitter the other day. She says, listen, there are four people running, right? Andrew Jones, who's basically the Republican, but nobody is listed by party, I don't think, in this primary. They're just all thrown together. And you vote for as many candidates as you want. That's the stupidity of ranked choice voting. You vote for a first choice, a second choice, a third choice, and a fourth choice if there are four people voting.
That guy, the fourth guy is Mike.
Butler is running.
But that's, you see those signs?
Michael Butler.
You see those sentences, I like Mike?
Yeah.
Those are for him.
Okay, but Jane's point is, if anybody that lives in the city, when you go to vote for the other three candidates and not Tashar. Even if you don't necessarily want Kara Spencer to be the mayor, you could knock Tashar out in the primary because of the way this stupid ranked choice voting thing works. So, you know, she's got some ideas here, and I'm going to talk to her about that and maybe how this thing was handled. And also, Governor Kehoe spoke yesterday with his sort of State of the State address and talked about his priorities. One of his priorities is regaining control for the state of the St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department. And we can talk to Jane about that. We'll get her on here Friday morning for sure in the 8 o'clock hour to chat about that. I talked to her about it yesterday. Carl, I have talked for far too long, and it is time to get to the shortlist, please.
The Mark Cox Shortlist.
Since you brought up Truth Seek, I would like to point out, while I vow to provide the truth from this podium, we ask that all of you in this room hold yourselves to that same standard.
Wow. Yeah, Truth Seek, Seek Truth, and Caroline Leavitt calling them out, baby.
An undocumented immigrant is not a criminal because he or she is undocumented. That is a civil offense.
Is Sunny Hostin, is she just slow? She claims to have a law degree. I don't know. Caroline Leavitt made it very clear yesterday. If you broke into our country, you're a criminal. If somebody kicks in your door this morning and tries to move into your living room, you've been violated.
St. Louis is a welcoming city, as evidenced by our establishment of the Office of New Americans to connect resettling people from all over the world who are choosing St. Louis as their home.
UNA. UNA, that's what we'll call it, the Office of New Americans. She doesn't care if they're illegal or not. She just wants them to earn a little bit of money and pay their earnings tax to the city. That's all Tashara Jones cares about.
The Lyft driver, he was kind enough and apologetic, but refused her a ride and said that she would not fit and that her weight couldn't be handled by his tires.
Oh, my goodness. That was a Detroit rapper who I've never heard of before, Dank DeMoss. Carl, you're a musical genius. Had you ever heard of that one?
I have not heard of her.
You're not?
I have not.
You are not
the
musical savant I thought you were.
Well, I am now going to look her up and play her at the next hockey game.
Dank DeMoss, pushing the scales at 450 pounds. And she was angry because she ordered a Lyft, like the cheapest Lyft you could get to go somewhere. And when the guy showed up in his little Prius and looked at her, he's like, "You're not going to fit in here." And she got mad, and now she's suing Lyft, if you can believe that nonsense. I don't know if she thinks she was fat shamed or what, but he didn't probably want these springs in his car destroyed, and he was worried that she wasn't going to fit through the door. But you're not allowed to say those things these days, or you get sued. And apparently that's what's happening there in Detroit. We'll talk more about it a little later. I've got the story here for you. Coming up, bottom of the hour, speaking of sanctuary cities, you know there's nothing Tashara Jones would love better than to be a sanctuary city. You see what happened in New York yesterday? Yeah, they're calling her the Ice Barbie. Kristi Noem was out with the ICE officers roaming the streets looking for illegals. We're going to talk to Tanya J. Powers about it at the bottom of the hour. Carl, who
yes.
we have this morning?
So, Mark, remember when the Super Bowl used to be held in January?
I do.
So that means this week is the anniversary of all the Super Bowls from the previous. In fact, Monday was the anniversary of 1991 and Whitney Houston.
No more condoms or contraception to the Taliban. No more teaching them how to weave carpets. No more funding drag shows to Ecuador at $20,000 a clip or atheism to Nepal at $500,000 for a grant. No more transgender operas. That was in Colombia. That was a real thing for, I say, $47,000 to $50,000 under the Biden administration. There was a transgender comic book that they put out for whatever amount of money in Peru. These are all things that come to an end under Secretary Rubio and President Trump.
Now, Mark Cox, Soapbox.
You know what started out as denial, then disbelief about number 47, has turned into abject terror for the liberal establishment. And it all came about because of a spending freeze. Yeah, you heard me right. Not a spending cut, but a spending freeze. And right now, the left is racing around like rats on a sinking ship because we've severed the main artery they used to waste your taxpayer dollars around the globe and right here at home. Listen, there is zero accountability in Washington, D.C. for trillions of dollars that we waste, and they want to act like they can't cut spending a dime. What this points out on a bigger scale, the reaction you saw yesterday, is that DOGE faces a monumental challenge to cut any fat from Washington, D.C. All right, among the money that was ready to go out the door, you heard Brian Mast there, that's who that was, the congressman, was $50 million to pay for condoms for people in Gaza. Why are we paying for condoms for people in Gaza? Well, the terrorists were inflating them with helium and putting little bombs in them and floating them over to Israel. Most of the people in Gaza are either terrorists or they support terrorists. You understand that, right? Hamas is a terrorist organization. That's an outrageous example, but it's an example of how these bureaucrats in this country have ruined us. You would have thought their left arm got cut off yesterday when they discovered all these pet projects and payouts to their little NGOs around the globe might be stopped, like supporting LGBTQ plus ? Hashtag crap overseas being funded by American taxpayers. Now, this establishment includes Republicans and Democrats, no doubt about it. But they thought they could weather the storm that Donald Trump promised to bring against excessive government spending, because they figured that during the appropriations process, they'd both get together and find enough pork projects to satisfy each other. And that way they could keep the money flowing. What President Trump announced yesterday that they freaked out over was a way around that. Imagine 23 attorneys general from blue states rushed out to find a liberal Democrat judge to try to stop it, which they did temporarily. But my guess is in a court battle, this ends up winning. And that's why I always play my favorite bite from our buddy Ron Swanson.
It's never too early to learn that the government is a greedy piglet that suckles on a taxpayer's teat until they have sore-chapped nipples.
Yeah, you're watching this in real time, man. They figured out a way to fool the American people on how they spend your hard-earned tax dollars. It's another reason why when Donald Trump suggested we get rid of the income tax this week, they freaked out. Our government is so big and bloated, reining it in might be impossible, but it sure as hell going to be a lot of fun to try. And along the way, we can enjoy wrecking the mental health of every liberal bureaucrat in America.
Of all children.
This is really about putting kids first. Kids need options. Kids learn differently. The kids have different needs. The kids fit in different places. And that's what we love about school choice.
It is School Choice Awareness Week, and an opportunity to remind people what's at stake here. It's really important, in my opinion. We got Shelby Doyle on with us this morning, Vice President of Public Awareness. And Shelby, welcome to the show. How are you?
I am great this morning because it's National School Choice Week. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'll bet you're fired up. You got lots to talk about. Let's talk about what's going to be done in Missouri this week, specifically to celebrate this and draw attention.
Sure. So National School Choice Week is a public awareness event that happens every January, and the idea is to help families figure out what all their K-12 options are and also start exploring them. So this week in Missouri, we've got two cool giant events happening and then a lot of local events. There's going to be a Capitol rally in Jefferson City tomorrow, and then this Saturday, there's a citywide open house with dozens of schools having an open house for parents to come visit in St. Louis. And that's happening for the third year in a row as a part of School Choice Week.
Yeah. When it comes to school choice, I've made this argument so many times. This crosses socioeconomic lines. Everybody thinks, well, you know, this is not good for public schools. But this crosses socioeconomic lines because people who don't have a high income might feel trapped in a district where the students are underperforming, the schools are underperforming. What's wrong with allowing those parents to port their money to a district where their kid can get a better education?
I agree with you, and I'd say this is also not really a hypothetical. We know what happens to public schools when we have a broad and open school choice system. We've seen that happen in several states. I love to point to Florida, where students are really doing well and where public schools are a very thriving part of the school choice ecosystem. The point is not to get everybody from public to private. Lots of people will choose any of the options, including charter or magnet or online homeschooling or another public school. But the point is that a parent has information nobody else has because they know their child best and they can find the right school for them.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I mean, as you look at this from a nationwide perspective, you mentioned Florida. What are the other states that are getting it right? Doesn't Arkansas have a pretty wide open voucher system available right now?
Yeah, so Arkansas did pass an Education Freedom Account program, which is basically a stipend that parents can use for flexible education expenses, not just tuition, but things like curriculum or support services for kids, not just in private, but also in homeschooling options. They passed that in 2022, so it's now fully universal, which means any student in the state is eligible to use it. And on top of Arkansas, you've got states like Arizona or West Virginia that have really, really robust school choice options in every single type of school.
Yeah. Yeah. We passed something in Missouri last year that has to do with tax credits and kind of a shell game where you're moving the money around. And, I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but it's not the wide open school voucher program I'd love to see in this state.
Yeah, I know a little bit about the Most Scholars program. So this is definitely in the same vein of a private school choice program. One thing it does have going for it is it is an education savings account program as opposed to a traditional voucher. The difference being that instead of this has to be used all on tuition, it gives you the option as a parent if you want to combine a couple things or use things for transportation in some states or curriculum or special therapy for occupational therapy if your child has a disability, you can use it more flexibly. So that's one positive, but I know that I have heard from folks that they'd like it to be a little bit more robust and make it more possible for parents
to
choose.
Well, it's just not as easy, right? I mean, if parents have to have the means to participate in it, right? As opposed to a voucher where you could say, okay, my contribution to my local school district was $6,000 last year through my personal property or through my property tax. I want to take that dollar amount and transfer it to another school.
Yeah, the funding is where things get tricky, isn't it, always? And it's so different state by state that states structure their programs a bit differently because different states have a larger proportion of public school dollars made up by state funding versus local funding. And of course, there's federal dollars due. And so things are happening at the state legislature level usually only allow you to bring those state dollars with you to another school of your choice, which is, of course, only a piece of that pie.
Yeah. Of course, we are talking to Shelby Doyle, who's with the National School Choice Awareness Foundation. What do the numbers show in terms of improvements in outcomes when you have systems like this in place?
Yeah. So the way I describe it is we know that school choice is a rising tide that lifts all boats. There's an organization called EdChoice that does great research on this. And we've seen that when states have broad private school choice programs in particular, a lot of research has been done around those. We know that not only students in those programs, but actually all the schools in that local area generally see higher student performance, which I think is really encouraging. And outside of just the private school choice world, there's been some really encouraging research that just came out from Stanford's Credo Institute about the ability of public charter schools to often serve students in urban environments, particularly students who might otherwise not be performing as well, but they are able to serve those students better than those local public schools.
And why is that? Your resources?
Well, I think a lot of it is just being able to differentiate, being able to pick a thing and be really, really good at that thing and getting students who align with it in the right seats where that really works for them.
Yeah. Well, you know, I know that geography has a lot to do with it for a lot of people. I mean, there are other barriers, right? Transportation, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Those are decisions parents also have to grapple with.
Absolutely. Yeah, that is really where the rubber meets the road. It's nice to talk about all of these things that happen at the state policy level. But for a parent, you might know of a great school, but if you can't actually get your kid there and home every single day, they don't have public transportation or you can't find a carpool option, then that can really put things out of reach. So that's something that we try to talk about quite a bit. Transportation and special education are the two things that parents most frequently tell us are keeping them from being able to choose what they want to do for their student. And so we try to make parents aware of how all of those factors affect every type of school. And it's a lot to consider, which is why it's important to start now in January, even for the upcoming fall.
Yeah. Well, I mean, here we are in the we just started our legislative session, and I know there'll probably be more discussions on this. I know the governor who just got elected is a big fan of magnet schools, charter schools, I should say, in the state of Missouri. And I know that's one of the things that you guys push as well, right? Public charter schools?
That's true. Yeah. So we talk about open enrollment in district schools, charter, magnet, private, online, and homeschooling options. And public charter schools are kind of interesting in Missouri in particular, because this is not unique to Missouri, but in a few states around the country, there are tons of public charter schools in big cities and then almost none anywhere else, which
yes,
is great if you live there and tough if you don't.
Well, so rural communities are not going to have as much access to that.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, that doesn't have to be that way. There are other more rural states that have a wider diffusion of public charter schools. But for whatever reason, in Missouri, that has not happened.
Interesting. Well, I did. Well, how can people find out more?
You can find out more about your options and about the events that are happening this week, including that citywide open house in St. Louis at schoolchoiceweek.com.
All right, schoolchoiceweek.com. Shelby Doyle, thank you for your hard work on this.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I think it's crucial. It's just crucial. For the people who are against this, their argument is often that it's going to hurt the public schools. It's going to force competition. You can bet the teachers union is opposed to it because they don't want to see those dollars removed from the school district. But if the school district sees its enrollment going somewhere else because it's not meeting the standards, then it's going to force change in these schools that are failing. And a competition is a good thing. Let's hope we can get this figured out.
Go yourself. Is that clear?
Yeah, Elon there telling him what to do with all of this Nazi stuff they keep throwing at him. It's just ridiculous. And having this conversation with my teenager yesterday. All the kids at school think Elon's a Nazi. I'm like, that's because all they look at is Instagram and Snapchat and stuff that's not a news source. And the liberal left is spinning this still like it's something. I don't know what to say. By the way, if you are following along on the show this morning, and I know some of you are, because I'm reading your comments on Facebook, in terms of, when we put out the show there on the X, we put out the rundown. We tell you what we got coming up in the show. And we were supposed to have Tanya J. Powers there at the bottom of the hour. And normally we'd have Kim on a whim there. Obviously, Kim is not back till tomorrow. So we tried to schedule a live guest with Tanya, and they didn't tell Tanya.
45 seconds, we found out.
45 seconds before we went back on the air, we realized that Tanya did not know she was supposed to be a guest on our show this morning. So that was a little flub up on the part of the Fox radio desk up there. So we had to scramble a little bit. But that was a good interview if you had not heard, because it is still School Choice Week.
And speaking, it's also Catholic Schools Week, and it's also Lutheran Schools Week.
It's Lutheran Schools Week. Annie Fry is going to join me a little later in the 8 o'clock hour to talk about a pet project she's taken on there to help fund education and scholarships for children to attend Lutheran schools, since it's Lutheran Schools Week. Good for her. It's also the Lunar New Year, the Chinese New Year today.
Yes, the year of the snake.
So I didn't even know that until I was driving in this morning and I listened to somebody on Fox News say, it's the Lunar New Year today. And in the state of New York, the kids have no school today. My guess is there's a big enough Chinese population up there that somebody managed to convince Kathy Hochul she could get extra funding for her political campaign if she gave the kids a day off school for the Lunar New Year. So it's got to be a tiny minority of people that affects, I would think, even in the state of New York.
Well, they have a Chinatown.
Well, I'm not saying that they're not there. I'm just saying that to make it a full statewide holiday for 2% of the population it seems a little ridiculous to me. But that's another reason I'm glad I don't live in New York. Have I mentioned that?
Many times.
I'll just point that out, by the way.
You'd like upstate New York, I think. They're pretty red.
There are parts of New York, absolutely. Like, I had a good friend who grew up in Sparta, New Jersey. And if you don't know where that is, it is nestled up in the mountains of northern New Jersey, close to the New York state line, just north of Pennsylvania. What's the area up there, Carl, where they have the it's not the Pompanos. What's it called? They have
Appalachian?
No. It's in northern Pennsylvania. It's the place where you can go, and they've got the heart shaped bathtubs and all that. The resort up in the mountains. Like it's escaping my mind. But
Poconos?
Maybe that's it. But I had a certain idea in mind of what New Jersey looked like. I thought it was the ugly area there across from New York City.
Sure.
And my buddy says, "Man, you've never seen New Jersey. Come up and visit where he grew up." And his family is just a little lake nestled up in the mountains. It's close to there. The Poconos is what I was thinking of.
Okay.
You'd wake up in the morning, there's still fog because you're in the mountains, and then it would burn off, and there's this beautiful lake, and everybody had boats, and I mean, it was just idyllic. It's just gorgeous. And upstate New York is the same way, and many of those are red areas, but they're overwhelmed by the people that live in New York City, and therefore it's a very, very blue state. Speaking of which, I will take our Pete over their Pete any day of the week. Can I just say that that is Pete Hegseth versus Pete Buttigieg? And I've seen several memes about that as well, with Buttigieg wearing that that fake outfit with boobs on it, where he could act like he was feeding his child and, you know, blah, 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 bonding with his child, because clearly there are only two genders, but they want to mix that. And I'm thinking about this because their Pete can't stand not being in the public eye. Now we have a real Secretary of Transportation in Sean Duffy, who got approved this week. So Pete Buttigieg, Pothole Pete, who never accomplished anything and is a small town mayor, but somehow became famous because of identity politics on the left, has now carpetbagged himself to Michigan, where yesterday a Democrat senator up there announced he wasn't running for re-election. And now Pete Buttigieg is apparently a candidate or thinking of making a run at the Senate from the state of Michigan. And I don't know. I mean, they're insane enough up there with who they elect as governor that I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't get elected. He's got wide name recognition from his time in the Biden administration. So that's what they got going on. And speaking of Pete's, we'll just make this a Pete segment. How about that? A Peter segment here. So Peter Hegseth yesterday did something pretty amazing, too. I loved the speech he gave as he was walking into the Pentagon for the first time. There were people outside on the steps, and he was telling them what he's going to do, and he's going to bring back lethality and get rid of nonsense like DEI programs throughout the Pentagon. The first thing he did when he walked into his office is he signed a piece of paper revoking the security detail and the security clearance for disgraced General Mark Milley. And I love that. Shout out here to the Gateway Pundit for that story this morning. I'll tell you that. He got his comeuppance, is what they say here. Immediately, Hegseth pulled his personal security detail and security clearance. But the news gets even better. Hegseth will order the new acting inspector general to conduct a review to ascertain whether any evidence exists for Milley to lose a star in retirement due to his deceitful actions undermining the chain of command during President Donald Trump's first term. Remember when he admitted to going back channel to some of his military colleagues, was it China? He did that too, because he thought that he disagreed with Trump's approach to something, so he was just going to circumvent him. And this is the guy that the left celebrates, that they gave some Medal of Freedom, didn't he give a preemptive pardon to Milley? Wasn't he one of them? I think he was for Biden. So. This is outrageous. We just came off 4 years of a president that, by all reports, on a day-to-day basis, other world leaders could not reach him. Trump told that story this weekend. He's hearing this from other world leaders. We tried to call President Biden. They would tell us he wasn't available and might get back to us in a month. Then we call back in a month, and we still nothing. So if ever this country needed leaders that were going to circumvent the leadership, it might have been under the Biden administration, because who was actually in charge? Who was making the calls? Wasn't Lloyd Austin. Lloyd Austin was AWOL. Well, it was probably some snot-nosed 26-year-old liberal progressive leftist who was making all sorts of decisions for the policy of the United States of America, including sending $50 million to Gaza for condoms, or $50 million worth of condoms to Gaza. I don't even know how the money was appropriated. Some NGO who went out and purchased condoms? Give me a break. But don't cut out any of that. That might freak people out. That's where we are in America. Hey, coming up next hour, we'll talk a little bit more about getting rid of the Missouri state income tax. Wouldn't that be a miracle?
Get more at 971talk.com.